the first part of the Filipino-American National News' interview with veteran Filipino-American actor Derek Bostico. So magandang gabi sa inyong lahat and welcome to the Filipino-American National News. We are lucky to have here on our airwaves and on a Zoom call none other than Derek Bostico. You are first a b-boy, a dancer, an actor. I mean, you've done it all. You're a renaissance man. That's one of the biggest compliments I always give to people in like the acting field because they carry many different hats. And so thank you for joining us this evening here on the Filipino-American National News, Derek.
Thank you for having me.
You grew up originally in Pittsburgh, California. I'm lucky I went there once in 1990 for a grandfather of some sort. You know, Filipinos were all connected somehow. So he was like 105. So went to a birthday out there the Philippine Center building that you guys used in the Fabulous Filipino Brothers. So when I saw that, I was like, oh, I've been in that building.
We grew up in that town, and that was our local Philam Center. And one of the best things about growing up in Pittsburgh, California, was that my uncle across the street was the mayor. My ninong was the guy. A fireman. It was like Filipinos in all positions of power. So it was like you can grow up to be anything you want. You know.
What were those early years before the brothers and the sister? Well, before you became a Kuya, what was life like for you? We don't always hear that version of the Bostico story.
Yes. I want to say it was a typical Filipino upbringing, you know? We were like middle-class family, five kids. My grandparents lived with us. And my cousins came over all the time. My dad had a lot of brothers with kids. My mom, she has three sisters and a brother. So there were a lot of cousins and extended cousins. I remember like Friday night rosaries, you know, all the kids would gather. And while the adults prayed, we would play hide and seek outside and get all sweaty. And then, you know, when the rosary was over, they would go and play mahjong till late in the night. And we would just play and eat until we fell asleep on the floor, you know.
I think I've once heard a story about these rosary sessions where maybe a tita may have gotten possessed or something, or she felt the spirits.
Our family was very religious, and when we were younger, I remember two of my aunts were praying, and they, they had spirits touch them. I recall that memory very well.
And eventually you do become a Kuya, I believe. Is it initially a five-year difference between you and your first sibling? Four.
So it's me, and then Darian came 4 years later, and then the fifth year, Dante came, and then like 2 years later, Dion came. And then I am 11 years older than my youngest sibling, Ariana.
And you guys... And your parents weren't necessarily the artistic type, but your mom got you guys into many different type of things growing up. Why do you think that was important for your mom?
It was multifold. One, she wanted to give us things that she never had that she wanted to do, you know? So she enrolled us in like piano, guitar, tap dance, jazz, karate, vocal lessons, you know? And she was doing that, you know, because these are things she wanted to do, but also she was kind of, you know, living vicariously through us, but also to keep us out of trouble, you know, and keep us busy. And she unknowingly was raising a family of artists, which is kind of cool when you think about it, you know? I mean, because from there we went from like martial arts to breakdancing in the streets of San Francisco and Berkeley and Oakland. And then till we eventually got scholarships to the San Francisco Ballet Company. And we were these like little hood kids, you know, being driven in by our mom for an hour to go study ballet.
And before you got into ballet, you and your brothers formed a dance crew, a b-boy dance crew, the Street Freaks. Can you tell me a little bit about the Street Freaks?
Yes, absolutely. So at the time, you know, it was early 80s, and there were all these dance crews. And I wanted to have a crew with my friends, but it wasn't working out. So my mom was like, you make a crew with your brothers. And it was kind of weird looking because I'm always... I was 4 or 5 years older than them, so I was always taller and they were little, but it worked out. You know, I would choreograph the routines. My mom would make us, she would sew and make us our outfits, which was cool. And we started dancing in the streets, and it kind of came as a natural thing from martial arts. You know what I mean? So we did that, and then we started dancing in the streets, and we got invited to all the big events. We performed at San Francisco Giants, the Oakland A's games, the 49ers games, Oakland Raiders. We danced all throughout the Bay Area anytime there was an event. In fact, we even opened up for Prince one night at a nightclub doing our breakdancing, but our mom wouldn't let us stay that late. We kept waiting, but I don't think he went on till maybe like 2 a.m. and we left the club at like 12, 12:30.
That does sound like the Purple One Prince to not quite go on when scheduled. But I mean, that must have been such a great experience. And then that led, as you said previously, into the San Francisco Ballet Company. How did that come about?
I'm trying to remember. I think we might have gone to an audition, because what happened was the San Francisco Ballet Company had their own breakdancing crew. So it was called the San Francisco Ballet Breakdancers. And so as breakdancers, you would perform at some of their stuff, but as well, we all got free classes. And through getting the free classes, my three younger brothers did the Nutcracker for the company one season. And then after that season, we left and we came to Los Angeles.
And that was a pivotal moment in terms of you guys moving to Los Angeles, because from what I know of the story about that is your father, at least for the first year, he stayed behind in Pittsburgh while you and your mom and your siblings made your way out to Los Angeles. Why did your mother or your father felt that was important for you guys to move out there?
Well, I think we already like had reached whatever the tops that we could here, or not here, in the San Francisco Bay Area as dancers. And at that time, you know, my parents, my dad had a friend and they had an investment group, and a bunch of them pulled their monies, you know, mortgaged their houses and all this. And they went to go buy a property, and that friend ended up embezzling the money and taking off. So because of that event, my mom was like, you know what? My kids are talented. I'm going to take them to Los Angeles and I'm going to try to get them started in the industry as dancers. And my dad was like, okay, I can't go there right now. So then he stayed behind and he would drive out every weekend to see us. You know, his commitment to the family was still there. And my parents were still together. It was just a decision that my mom made that she was going to try to get us involved in the entertainment industry. And when we came down here, we started out as dancers and people were like, dancing? I think you guys should try acting. So then we tried acting. My mom found an acting class for us, got us all agents and managers. And, you know, Dante, of course, was the first one to gain success. But, you know, all of us studied for over 20 years and are very adept in our profession and know what we're doing. So it was only a matter of time, I think, before all of us started working.
In terms of working, from what I can see on your IMBD, the first listed credit is a TV movie, which was, for the youngsters out there, that was a really big thing in the 80s and 90s, TV movies. And you played a person by the name of Stanley Kim in a movie called A Matter of the Heart. Mm. How was that first time being on a real, production set?
Well, that one was a little different because I was playing a child prodigy of piano. So they had to send me the piece and I had to learn it. You know what I mean? And I took piano for like 7 years, but I wasn't that good. So, but I had to practice it to the track. And then when they shot it, they start with your hands and then they pan up and all this. Of course, the piano was muted and they play the soundtrack to it. But that was with Jane Seymour. And she was hot at the time, I remember. And I was like, oh, that's Jane Seymour.
I wasn't going to go that route, but being that we're somewhat similar in age, I could see the thoughts in your head at that time. You grew up in Pittsburgh, California, where there is a lot of Filipinos, and then you moved to a part of California, Paramount, which is near, I believe, Compton. What was that upbringing like living in Paramount, California?
Well, first we went from Los Angeles, we moved to Buena Park, which is like borderline Orange County. And then I transferred to Cerritos High School, and we lived in Cerritos. We had some family members that had a house there, and we had rented it. My auntie Joy Oizon, or Joy Reppert, was very instrumental in helping us move to Los Angeles because she split the rent with my mom, you know, in our first apartment. And I think it was a little bit of a culture shock going to Cerritos, because it wasn't just so much Filipinos anymore. There were a lot of Koreans. There was a lot of Indians. And it's just a different lifestyle in Southern California. Then from moving there to when my parents did buy their first house in Paramount, that was a little bit more urban, you know, and it was a little tougher. By that time when we moved there, I was already graduated from high school. And my brothers were going to the local high school. And at the local high school, they had like shootings at the local middle school. Someone got shanked with a screwdriver, you know. So it was a little rough, you know, a little rougher than we were used to. But being a part of like, I don't know, the hip hop culture and Filipino culture, Filipinos, I feel like Filipinos, we're the blacks of the Asian community. You know what I mean? They call us jungle Asians. You know, our skin tone is darker. We're a little bit more musical. Everyone in the Philippines loves basketball. You know what I mean? I mean, I think we fit in just because of who we were as Filipinos and how we were raised. You know what I mean? Whether it was, you know, Darian playing basketball on the court with other people, gaining respect, you know, Dante speaking his spoken word. Dion was, I think he was on a show at that. No, shortly after that, he was on a show. And I was in college. I was a newly teenager dad. And so I was facing other challenges in life.
You definitely had a little bit of a different route as opposed to your brothers in terms of early on in their acting career. But in this time, this is the early 90s, and you're a little bit older than them. There isn't necessarily per se acting roles for Asian Americans, or especially young Asian Americans. What was it like trying to go for roles in Hollywood at that time?
You know, I have to say it was a little discouraging. It was tough because there would be an Asian role, and usually when they had an Asian role, they were looking for someone Chinese, Japanese, or Korean. When we show up, they're like, oh no, you're Latino or you're Hawaiian. There wasn't so much known about Filipinos at that time, and they weren't considered so much Asian. But that's what I give big props to Gene Kahayan for creating The Debut and putting us on the map with that. You know what I mean? Because of The Debut, people started to recognize who Filipinos are and what they are. But even still to this day, it can be a challenge. You know what I mean? My kids have way more opportunities than I've had, but they still sometimes people don't know what Filipinos are.
And like you said, your route was a little bit different. You went to college, you went to Long Beach State. Did you think you would still be acting? Were you still actively acting while you were in school and trying to be a young father?
That was a really different time in my life. I went to Long Beach State and I went to Long Beach City College, and I never finished. I was studying business, And, you know, of course, in retrospect, you think, yeah, I should have finished it. All those skills would have helped me, especially since this is considered show business. You know what I mean? And I think that's one of the things that I lacked early in my career is the business aspect of it, that it's relationships and people you meet and maintaining those relationships, just like anything else, you know. I was kind of off and on auditioning, but I wasn't so serious. You know, I worked a myriad of jobs to help support my child and support myself. And I wasn't sure what direction I was going in. But I think deep in my heart, I've always been an artist. And sometimes I didn't always acknowledge that.
And just a reminder to our viewers and listeners, we have actor Derek Bosco here on the Filipino American National News. You spoke of a very groundbreaking film in terms for Filipino Americans, Asian Americans, The Debut. That film also starred your other brothers in there. What was that like to star with your brothers in a groundbreaking Filipino American film like The Debut?
You know, it was awesome. It was the first time that we all got to work together, because like I said, you know, in casting, it's, you know, 90% Caucasian and then maybe 10% ethnic. And of that 10%, maybe 8% or 7% is African-American. 2.5% might be Latino, and the other 5% is Asian. You know what I mean? So often there is one role and we were all competing for it all the time, especially because we're so close in age, you know what I mean? So it was tough in the beginning, but because we have trained together for so long, we know each other's strengths and weaknesses, you know, and we come to know, oh, this role is suited better for Dion, or this role is suited better for Darian, or this role is suited better for Dante. Of course, we're all going to compete for it and put our best foot forward, but it was challenging in the beginning auditioning against each other for one role. So working on The Debut was amazing, you know what I mean? And we're working on a Filipino film with Filipino movie stars from the Philippines that have a certain weight and gravitas to them that I feel that I am finally achieving what they have. You know what I mean?
And that's a really key point that you're talking about there, how later on in your career where you've gained a lot of confidence as an actor. It's ironic in The Debut, your character, Edwin Mercado, is this very sure of himself about the culture in regards to that. So was there some irony of playing a character that was very sure of himself and, I guess, strong-willed?
You know, it was written based upon this real person, Edwin, who ran a t-shirt company and was political. And I had the opportunity to hang out with him prior to filming and getting to know him. So that gave me a lot of basis of the character. You know what I mean? And that's the fun part about acting is doing the research, you know, whether it's finding the clothes or taking a dance class. Like we did a lot of dance classes for that movie. Gene brought in dance choreographers. We had Cabo Modern from Irvine. And just doing all the practices and all that stuff was a lot of fun.
And I think one of the great things about that time was that it started to at least initially give people out there in, I guess, mainstream movies to see that there were potentially roles for Filipinos. So it's just unfortunate that it took about 20 years for more roles to come out there. You haven't always played a Filipino. You've played diverse roles. I'm just looking at some of your films out there. I mean, you played roles where you've had like a Latin accent. You have played, I feel like some of these characters, you've played a gay man in films. Why do you think it's kind of cool thing for you, for yourself, that you were able not just to be typecasted as an Asian actor?
You know, there's many facets to all of us. You know what I mean? We're not just Filipino. We're also fathers. We're brothers. We're, you know, mentors. We're students. You know, we're uncles. You know, we wear many hats. And my job as an actor is to find out how I identify with these different cultures. I might not be gay, but I know what it's like to be attracted to someone, to be in love with someone, you know, to have these feelings for someone, man or woman. I know what it's like to, basically you're trying to get to the bottom humanity and emotions of it all, you know? And that's the key, you know, of finding these facets of yourself. A lot of, how am I like this character? How can I bring the humanity into this character? You know, and playing bad guys to me is so much fun. You know, like in this one film, I played like a, what is it? Like a, I guess he was a bully. He was like kind of on the dark side of things, and he was a pedophile, but he also, you know, he was an unsavory character, but I found the points in him where I can identify and put a little bit of humanity in him, where he's not just this guy who's a pedophile. Do you know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying. And, you know, your four children all have some artistic side to them. Why was it important for you to help foster their artistic endeavors?
Man, we're Filipino, man. We have a get together. We need to have some music playing. I grew up, I had all these uncles come over that played guitar, piano, bongos, everything. So I wanted to have a band, you know? My oldest daughter, Ella J. Bosco, she took guitar, ukulele, and piano. And she writes all her own music. And my son, Deuce Bosco, he's the drummer. He's 17 now. He's the drummer of the band. And my youngest, Emerson Bosco, 15, she's the bassist of the band. And so anytime we have a family party, that's an instant party right there, bringing them, you know. But they're also actors as well, you know. Actors. My oldest daughter, Ella, did a film called Birds of Prey. And she played Margot Robbie's like sidekick in the movie. And it was the first first birth of Cassandra Cain. You know, some people loved it, some people hated it, but oh, she's behind me right there. Boom.
Yes.
Cassandra Cain. And then my son, Deuce, he's on a show right now, A Man on the Inside, which stars Ted Danson, and that's currently for your consideration for Emmys, and that's on Netflix, and he plays Ted Danson's grandson, which is pretty awesome. And they just finished filming season two of that, and season two will be coming out around Thanksgiving.
And that was the first part of our interview with Derek Bosco, from the famed Filipino-American entertainment family, the Boscos. You can hear part two of the interview on next week's edition of the Filipino-American National News. But if you get a little too antsy and you can't wait till next week, you can also listen and view the interview on our Facebook site, where you'll see the entire 41-minute interview with Derek Bosco. We've pretty much gone a little past the halfway mark with Derek on the interview for this week, for part one. Right now, we're going to play a song from a time when the four brothers, Derek, Dion, Dante, and Darian spent time as a singing group, ironically called the Bosco Brothers. And this is their song Vegetable, which features the artist Trey Washington. Stay tuned for sound effects.
We are the Bosco Brothers, and this cut's called Vegetable. I seen you smile when you heard the name of this track, but like everything else, it's all about love.
Midnight in the melancholy mood. They was playing hip hop, but I was feeling the blues. Surrounded by the madness, empty conversation feels like infinite sadness.
She walked in.
So fresh, can't even express. It was more than the way that she dressed that impressed me. She took my breath away, so fine, something like sunshine.
We caught eyes.
Now I'm looking at her, looking at me, knowing I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be. More than words could say, and I knew that she knew, cause she didn't turn away.
So I stepped,
and it felt like the room stood still. So intense, follow your sense, don't see, just feel. Mentally, metaphysically, the God in you meets the God in me.
Love is like a vegetable, vitamins and minerals, essential to feed your soul. Love is like a vegetable, vitamins and minerals, essential to feed your soul.
Daybreaks and I'm under the bridge, downtown is where I drew some blood. No love, no reason to live, and I got nothing left to give.
Close my eyes
as I lay back down and die. Will I be missed by the ones that I left behind? Then I hear a voice in the corner of my mind. Could it be sweet child of mine?
So I rise.
Don't you know that I'm in search of myself? Gotta spend a little time in church to see the face I haven't seen since birth. Now I know what life is really worth.
Day by day,
and I strive to be a better man. This habit, can I kick it?
Yes, you can.
I wonder if my daughter will ever know how she saved my soul.
Love is like a vegetable, vitamins and minerals, essential to feed your soul. Love is like a vegetable, vitamins and minerals, essential to feed your soul.
Night falls and I'm falling apart. They see the color of my skin before the color of my heart. I wish that I could find a way to change their minds, but I don't know where to start.
Try to fit in.
Greatest car and the latest gear. Wanna date all them girls that cheer. Wanna be down with the popular crowd, but I found that I wasn't allowed.
Got the doubt.
Now I roll with the boys in the hood, and it was like all to the good. Thought I wanted to be a big G, then the gun started pointing at me.
So I ran.
But I'm never gonna run from me. I finally found out what I wanted to be. I'm gonna play with the cards I was dealt and learn to love myself.
Love is like a vegetable, vitamins and minerals, essential to feed your soul. Love is like a vegetable, vitamins and minerals, essential to feed your soul.
So that was it. All we need is love. Love is all there is, and that's all we know of love. Or how we see it. Yo, Trey.
Love is like a vegetable.
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 Uh-huh.
Love is like a vegetable. 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 Love is like a vegetable.
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 That's right.
Love is like a vegetable.
Like hugs and kisses, nourishment for the soul. So give love, it's good for you.
Love is like a vegetable, vitamins and minerals,
celery,
essential to feed your soul.
Eggplant, tomato. No, that's kind of fruit.
This is Sound Effects, a radio playground, a compendium of radio theater, comedy, and the audio arts, with your host, Jerry Stearns. Well, good evening. I'm Jerry Stearns, and tonight on Sound Effects, a Radio Playground, we'll hear the final episode of Crazy Dog Audio Theater's Tread Softly, Bill Lizard. And a little later on, after the top of the hour, we'll hear a story from another audio about 1920s New York. But first, let me bring you this public service announcement.
The National Parks Association reminds you not to throw things into the Grand Canyon. The Grand Canyon is your canyon. It's the deepest canyon we have. But it will cease to be the deepest canyon if tourists and campers keep throwing things into it. If you want to help in this great campaign to preserve our natural wonders, use the litter cans on your city sidewalks. Don't throw things into the Grand Canyon.
Well, that was from Bob and Ray.